Well, many of us have experienced the kind of moment when God didn't do what we wanted God to do, where he doesn't do what we know and believe that he can do. As a pastor, I have sat with people, whether in a hospital waiting room or in their living room, people who believe that God can act in their suffering, in their grief, in their pain, and yet their biggest question is, why didn't God do what I know God can do, that I've seen him do, that he says he can do? Why is the answer no? Why is there a noisy silence? Have you ever been there? I'm going to assume in this room that you've been there. And if you haven't been there, I promise you in this broken world that you will be in a place where you're asking that question, where maybe you're not doubting that God can act, but you're wondering why in his power he doesn't. What do you do in those moments? What do you do when the cancer diagnosis doesn't go away and God doesn't heal? What do you do when you believe that God wants you to have a certain position or job and that doesn't happen? What do you do when you have a child and you've been praying and praying and praying for them for a certain thing and it hasn't happened at least yet? What do you do with the noisy, what it feels like at least, the noisy silence of heaven? This morning we meet a couple of ladies in John chapter 11. Turn there with me. We meet a couple of ladies who are experiencing this from Jesus. A couple of ladies who know Jesus really well, whom Jesus says he loves. They've asked Jesus to show up and heal, and he doesn't do it. At least he doesn't do it on their timetable. John chapter 11. And I'm going to show you some, first, a really hard truth right out of the gate. So buckle up a little bit. Hard truth maybe in your life. But then I'm going to show you a gentle truth about suffering. And then I'm going to show you the ultimate truth about suffering. So join with me here. John 11. Let me read longer text. So I'll take the first part, verses 1 through 16. And then we'll move ahead in the text from there. So John 11. This is the story, if you're glancing at it, of the death and resurrection Lazarus. Now, a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. And so the sisters sent to him, saying, Lord, whom you love is ill, Lazarus. But when Jesus heard it, he said, the illness does not lead to death, for it is for the glory of God. There's a pill to swallow. So that the Son of Man may be glorified through it. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard Lazarus was ill, he came quickly. Is that what the text says? It says he stayed. He stayed where he was 2 more days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. The disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and you're going to go there again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in a day? He said this before. If anyone walks in the day, he doesn't stumble because he sees the light of the world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him. And after saying these things, he said to them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to wake him up. The disciples said to him, Lord, if he's just fallen asleep, he'll recover, like he'll wake up. Now, Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking rest and sleep. And then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus has died. And for your sake, note this, and for your sake, I am glad that I was not there. Just think about those words. So that you may believe, but let us go to him. So Thomas, remember doubting Thomas? Doubting Thomas isn't doubting here. called the twins, said to the fellow disciples, let us all go. That way we may die with him, meaning we're going to get stoned down in Judea. Let's go. The storyline is, maybe you know this, but Martha and Mary know Jesus. Lazarus knows Jesus. You see this family show up in the Gospels a number of times before this, where they are hospitable and they let Jesus into their house. It's Mary, and you see it in this text, who anoints later Jesus with oil. These are friends of Jesus. These are people that Jesus knows really well and people that Jesus loves. These are people that love Jesus, that follow Jesus. And it's stark, isn't it? It's hard to almost read in this text. Lazarus is sick unto death. And the text says that Jesus, instead of coming quickly to Lazarus' aid, maybe unlike Jesus did in the resurrection, remember Jairus' daughter? He doesn't even know Jairus, the synagogue official, and he heals his daughter from afar. Or the widow, son of Nain. Jesus sees a funeral procession. He doesn't know these people. A funeral procession. And he heals his son, and he raises his son. And yet here, you have Jesus with somebody he loves, someone who loves him. And he says, I'm going to stay two more days. But the text gives us some clues as to why, doesn't it? We're not there yet. We haven't got to the climax of the text, so we don't know what happens, even though we know what happens. Why? Why would Jesus do this? What does the text say? In verse 4, this illness does not lead to death, even though physically Lazarus is going to die. It is for the glory of God. And then you see later, the disciples are struggling with belief in verse 15. And he says, I'm glad that this happened so that your faith and you will believe. He knows what he's going to do, and he knows what it's going to produce. But here's the challenge. Does Mary and Martha know that? Let me ask you, do you know and have the perspective that God has when things are going on in your life? You don't know the future. You don't know what Jesus knows. So it's a very difficult place to be in, that place where you're saying, God, why don't you show up in my suffering, in my pain, in my grief, in my disease, in my hardship? Where are you? But it's really clear from this text that Jesus is not cold. It's really clear in this text the reasons that he lays out that we don't really fully understand yet in the text. Why is Jesus delaying when he could have shown up and saved Lazarus before he died? His friend. Here's your truth. And this is a hard truth. See, Jesus's delays, let's say it this way. Jesus's often disappointing delays deepen our faith and display his glory, things that we can't necessarily see at the time. If you just do a survey of the scriptures, just survey the Old Testament and New Testament, and you see the Bible filled with these kinds of stories. Remember, God promised Abraham land, seed, and blessing, and then Sarah's barren. She can't have a child. You know how much waiting they went through, struggling with faith? Think about Jacob for 20 years. Remember how Jacob started out? He was grabbing his brother's heel. The Bible said he was a schemer and a deceiver. And for 20 years, he had to wait on a wife. He had to wait on flocks. And then at the end of 20 years, he had to wrestle with God, and he had a bum hip out of the deal, right? Before he received the promises of God, what he was waiting for, and he still went through suffering and pain. And yet, I'm going to guess, if you were in heaven, if you're in heaven and you're talking to Jacob, and we can do that someday, I'm going to guess that you know what Jacob's going to say to you? You know, all of that got me from being a schemer and a deceiver. All the waiting and all the suffering and all the hardship that I had to go through, God meant it for good. God used it for good in my life to make me who I was. Think about David. I mean, God told David that he was going to be king. He got anointed king. And you know what the first thing that happened? He didn't get to be king. Even though he was technically king, Saul was after him for a long time. Many of your Psalms that you read that comfort you in your pain and trouble are David running from Saul. And then he becomes king. My favorite prophet in the Old Testament, you got to talk to him someday in heaven. Habakkuk. Anybody know it? Can you spell it? Habakkuk. Go study Habakkuk a little bit. Habakkuk has a problem. It's the only prophet where it's Q&A, where the prophet has a problem with God. And his first problem is, God, why aren't you dealing with your own people? They're in sin. They're following all these ways. He's asking God these questions and God gives him an answer. Hey, guess what? I'm going to deal with God's people and the ways that they're living. And I'm going to use the Chaldeans to do it. And I'm going to bring destruction on the people of God. And then Habakkuk has a problem with how God is doing what he's doing. And yet God humbles him through all of that. God, why aren't you doing X? We see it all the way through the New Testament. You see it in your own life, don't you? God, why are you not answering my prayers? Why are you not healing my mother or my father? Why is this happening or that happening? And it feels like there's a delay in an answer. I think the questions that you're going to see in this text that Mary and Martha ask are completely reasonable. Where are you, Jesus? Why didn't you show up? They're both going to ask separately. They're both going to ask the same question. And it's a reasonable question for you to ask as well. But the question is, can we trust Jesus enough to go, I don't know the answer, but I know that he is wise and he is good and he's doing this for his own glory, whether I ever see it or not. And he's doing this to grow me in some way. And maybe you say, especially with really hard things, I'd rather not grow, okay? And that's okay. Here's the thing. We don't have pieces of the puzzle that we want to have. But I want to ask you this question. How many things in your life that you can look back on 3 to 4 years from now that you can go, okay, I think I'm beginning to see what God is doing? How many things in your life are you glad that God didn't answer your prayers even? Garth Brooks, I'm just importing this, right? We don't have the big pieces of the puzzle oftentimes, like Mary and Martha don't hear. When you fly in to Houston, back from wherever you go, and you look down at I-45, and you can see all the traffic, the people down there can't see what they're in, but you can see it. And that's the picture that God has that we often don't have. And so that's the painful truth, that God often uses hardship, suffering to grow us. That's perspective. But there's still some unanswered questions. I only have a few minutes here, right? There's a lot of unanswered questions that we all have about suffering. So let me just give you quickly 3 points about suffering for the road. All right, the first one is this, and you've got to come back to this. The first one is, and I think we have it up here, suffering is a result of the curse. It's a result of what happened back in Genesis, where Adam and Eve took, and they sinned against God, and they separated themselves from God, and they're your first parents, and as easy it is to blame what happened to the world on them, we participate too, right? But here's what happens in the curse. Not only do we have, there's 7 things in Genesis chapter 3 that happen as a result of the curse. There's conflict and enmity between one another. There's pains in working. There's pains in child. There's all kinds of problems now in the world. The Bible even goes as far as to say there's groanings that the creation goes through. And so when you want to think about all the trouble and suffering in the world, when you think about natural disasters, you think about diseases, you think about mental illness, you think about all the things that come out of that first one. Suffering is the result of the curse. and it brings about sin and death. That's the first truth you've got to remember when whatever you're thinking about, whatever is happening in your life, and it may not be a direct correlation. And this is really important, okay? When I say suffering is a result of the curse, what I don't mean is, hey, because you sinned yesterday, this happened to you. Or because you don't have enough faith that God is going to do X, Y, or Z, then this is why this is happening to you. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying that all the suffering and grief and hardship in the world ultimately becomes because, indirectly, because of the fall. And so whatever you want to put in that category. But here's the beautiful truth. Number two, is it already up there? Dang it. I wanted to unveil it. Jesus reversed that curse. He reverses that curse by suffering in our place. This is what redemption is. It redeems us in our life, but it also ultimately will redeem this world. So that when you get to the end of the book of Revelation, what do you see? You see a new heavens and a new earth. You see Genesis 1 and 2 restored again, where there's no tears, where there's no disease, where there's no hardship. That's what Christ has done by taking on our suffering. But here's the truth that we live in. This is today, number three. God uses suffering, like he does in this passage, redemptively, for his glory and our good. And we don't like that. Do you like that? It seems like such an incomplete answer, but this is what we see time after time in Scripture. And we have to hold on to this because when we have trouble with number three, let me just give you some encouragement. Go back to number one. When you say, why did this happen? That's the time where you go back to number one. And then you go back to number two, that ultimately Jesus will set all things right. And I know that doesn't answer all of the questions, the specific questions that you have about how God you don't feel or how God is delayed in your own life or what he's not done in your life. But what he's asking us to do is trust him. And maybe you say, I get it, Pastor. I understand that truth. I see that truth in the scriptures, but where is he in the midst of it? Is he present? Because it just kind of feels like that's a cold answer. Keep looking at this text. Look at how Jesus comes near. Verse 17. Let me read 17 through 37. And I want you to see what Jesus does. Now, when Jesus came, when he finally came, a couple days later, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off. As many of the Jews had come to Mary and Martha to console them, Jesus hasn't showed up, but people have. Concerning their brother. So when Martha, so you're going to see Martha for the next few verses. Martha heard that Jesus was coming. Remember Martha now. She went and met him. So Jesus doesn't even get to the house and Martha comes out. Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, look at her faith. Even now, I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. She has good theology. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha, more good theology, said to him, I know that he will rise in the resurrection on the last day. She has a right understanding of right doctrine. But look at what Jesus says to her. Jesus says, I am the resurrection. I am the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? That's the question. She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. And then you see Mary. When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, the teacher is here and is calling for you. And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary, rise quickly and go out. They followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved, note that, in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. So the Jews said, see how he loved him? But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying? Your second truth this morning is a gentle truth. It's Jesus meets us with his truth and his compassion in our grief. He's not cold. He's not distant. He meets us in that place. Both Mary and Martha in this story are disappointed in the delay of Jesus. Both say the same thing. Both say, if you would have been here, our brother who you love would be alive. They both say that. But look at Martha. Martha from verse 20 through 27, she's got all the right answers, doesn't she? She believes in Jesus. She understands how resurrection is going to work for Lazarus. She's probably encouraged and has hope like you and I do when someone dies about that. But she's still wrestling with, why didn't Jesus show up beforehand? And what does Jesus do? He meets her with the truth. She's someone who knows the truth, like many of you, who study truth, who understand truth, who know the truth. But the truth that he meets her with is a truth about himself. I think this is the most astounding, they're all astounding I am statements, the seven I am statements. I think this is the most astounding one. That Jesus doesn't just say, hey, I can give you resurrection. I can give you life. He says, I am resurrection. I am life. This is what he's saying to Martha, who understands the truth. So catch this. Here's the question. What did Martha need the most? What did Martha need the most? Did she need the most Lazarus raised? That's what she wanted. That's not what she needed the most. She needed Jesus the most. And he knew it. More than she needed her brother raised, she needed Jesus. And listen, more than getting all the answers that you don't have into suffering that you don't understand, you don't need what, you need who. You need Jesus, who is the resurrection, who is life. That's what Martha needed most, and that's what Jesus gave her. He meets her where she's at. The same is true for us. He meets us where we're at with what, maybe not what we want, but what we need the most in those moments. But look at Mary. Mary's a little different. Mary's the one that would sit and recline with Jesus. She's the one that's emotional. She's weeping. The other Jews are consoling her, weeping as well. They go to meet Jesus. She says the same thing. And how does Jesus meet her? If you need a Bible verse, if somebody asks you to memorize a Bible verse, the shortest one you got is right here in the Bible. Okay? Jesus weeps. He weeps. Here's the thing. Why does he weep? I mean, there's a lot of pages that have been spilt on why does Jesus weep? Is Jesus mad at Mary and Martha because of their lack of faith? I don't see a lack of faith. I see a real clarity on their understanding theologically. Why is Jesus troubled? I think the phrase that's mentioned twice here, deeply moved. You see it there? You see it in verse 34. You're going to see it again in verse 38. Deeply moved and troubled. Greek is really interesting, and so is Hebrew, because oftentimes there are word pictures that help us understand the meaning of phrases. The idea of deeply moved is this picture of a horse snorting. If you've ever been around horses, horses snorting when they're riled up, when they're upset about something that's happened. And so Jesus is both compassionately weeping for his friend Lazarus, and because his friends are weeping because of it, and he's riled up. Why do you think he's riled up? I don't think he's riled up at their lack of faith. I don't think that's what's going on. I think he's riled up about death itself. I think he's riled up and gets in the ring with sin and death, because that's what he's about to do. He's riled up at death and the curse of death. So he meets both Mary and Martha where they are at. Do you believe that Jesus can meet you where you're at? Even if he doesn't give you all the reasons something's happening in your life, do you believe that he can meet you there? When you weep, that he weeps. When you need the ultimate truth, that he gives it to you and says to you, I am life, I am resurrection. See, that's the beauty of Jesus. The author of Hebrews says it this way, describing Jesus. Jesus is not just transcendent and holy. He is. And God, he's also human. 100% human. 100% God. The God-man, as John will say in the beginning of John. He's human. Look at this. Since we have a high priest who's passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast to our confession. Look at verse 15. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore with confidence stay away or draw near. Draw near to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in our time of need. Here's what you don't see Jesus doing in this text. You don't see him saying to Mary and Martha, get over yourself. Here's what I'm going to do. Stop being so emotional. Stop asking all your questions. He receives all the questions. He can handle all your questions. He can handle all your emotions. He doesn't. He lets them do that. And he merely comes beside them and reminds them who he is and weeps with them. He meets us where we're at. Here's a question, side note. As believers in Jesus who walk with other people who are suffering, who are called to be people in community that love other people, do we have that kind of tenor and tone with people who are weeping, who are struggling with what God is doing? Or do we just say, suck it up, here's what God says, and ultimately it'll be okay? Husbands with wives, do we live with our wives in an understanding way? When they are emotional and they need encouragement, or do we just say, get over it? Wives to husbands as well, both ways. Brothers and sisters to one another. I want you to note that Jesus meets people where they are. He doesn't tell them to get over themselves, which we often do to one another. And so, what's Jesus going to do? We've seen a hard truth. We've seen a gentle truth. Let me show you the ultimate truth right here. What is Jesus going to do to demonstrate what he said in the beginning? Because he said, hey, this is going to be for my glory. This is also going to be for your good so that you believe. Well, show us, right? That's what I would be saying if I was the disciples. Well, tell me. Because you've so far, you've said, I'm glad. And you've said, I'm going to stay two more days. So look at this text in verses 38 through 44. Then Jesus, deeply moved again, horse snorting, right? Came to the tomb. It was a cave and the stone lay against it. Jesus said, take away the stone, Martha, the sister of the dead man. Said to him, Lord, by this time, there will be an odor, for he has been dead for 4 days. That's the third time you've seen it. Jesus said to her, did I not tell you that if you believe, you would see the glory of God? Back in verse 4. So they took away the stone, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you would always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, mainly the disciples, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The man who had died came out, his hands and feet bound with the linen stripes, his face wrapped with cloth. Jesus said to him, unbind him and let him go. Here's your third truth. And this is the ultimate truth of the text. Jesus has the final word on death and life. He always has the final word on death and life. Listen, when the text says the fourth day, there's something interesting going on in first century. And it was just kind of a folk theology, like people believed it. It wasn't necessarily biblical, but they had these ideas about death that all cultures do, that we often do. And the thought in first century is that the first 3 days after someone has died, that their spirit would hang around, all right? This is not biblical. It's just what they thought, right? That their spirit would hang around and maybe God would raise them. And the spirit would come back and they would be raised. That was their hope. That's why this text, I think John says again and again and again on the fourth day. And maybe it's the reason as well that Jesus waited 2 days. I want to make sure that everybody knows and believes that Lazarus is dead before I come and raise him. That there's no other explanation for what's going to happen than I raise Lazarus from the dead so that disciples, people would believe in my name that I am the resurrection and the life. Didn't know that earlier, did you? Right? The fourth day. And Martha, being Martha, she's like, hey, there's going to be an odor, right? Just warning you. But this is what Jesus does. He goes into the stench of sin and death, and he raises people anew. The same is true spiritually for you and me. We are born into sin. We are spiritually dead. We are corpses. There is a stench, and he raises us. He breathes new life into us, the basis of his son. And he raises us to life, just like he raises Lazarus here. And I think Lazarus got the raw end of the deal, frankly. He's been dead for 4 days. He's been in glory for 4 days, and he's got to come back here. You don't even see a response from the guy. I'm sure there is. And then he's got to die again. Right? Man. But here's the deal. Jesus is doing exactly in this sign, this miraculous sign. Remember the purpose of the sign? I've said it so many times in the book of John. John chapter 20, what were the purpose of the signs and the miracles? So that people would believe and have life in his name. But here's the deal. With resurrection, Jesus has already been talking about this. In John chapter 5, in John chapter 5, verse 21 and verses 28, look at these. For as the Father raises the dead and gives them life, so also the Son gives life to whom he will. See also Lazarus. Look at verse 28. Do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming when all who are in the tombs will hear his voice and come out. Who's already coming out? You already got Lazarus. He's already doing it, right? Here's the deal, though. sometimes God moves the stone and he heals and he does things that we know he can do. And sometimes we will never see this side of heaven, the stone rolled away. But one day, one final day, the stone will roll away and we will be with him in glory. Ultimately, even death is a delay because he will raise us anew. My question for you this morning in this is that, and it's Jesus who goes through the stench of spiritual death to bring life, and he speaks life into that death, and he raises us anew to be new creation. So here's the question for you that Jesus posed to Martha. Do you believe this? Do you believe that he is the resurrection and the life? So you've seen delay. You've seen their disappointment out of the delay. You've seen Jesus meet them in their grief and their suffering with truth and compassion. You've seen Jesus deal with sin and death and raise Lazarus anew. Maybe you've never read the books. I haven't. Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. One of the greatest omissions happens at the end of that movie. It's not in the movie, but it's in the book. You remember the scene, at least in the movie, where Sam and Frodo, after all the destruction, after all sin and death and destruction, they take the ring to Mount Doom and they drop it there. And then what happens? They get rescued. And then they come to this field and Sam wakes up. Sam wakes up and he sees Gandalf, which he thinks Gandalf is already dead. And he thinks he's either dead in the afterlife or he's dreaming. Remember that scene? And he says to Gandalf, "What's happened to the world?" And then he says this, "Is everything sad going to come untrue? Is everything sad going to come untrue?" And what does Gandalf say? He says, "Yes. A great darkness has lifted." What a picture. So whether Jesus rolls the stone away, one day he will, because he's the resurrection and the life. And that's the beauty of the gospel. He took on death. He died in our place. He rose again and defeated sin and death. Your takeaway this morning is one day, Jesus will make everything sad come untrue. Do you believe this? And the question is, until then, what do you do? Until that day, what do? We live trusting the resurrection and the life. We live. We live growing and believing that he is all wise, whether we can explain the delays and the disappointments or not. We live believing the resurrection and the life will meet us where we are, with truth and compassion. Until then, we live trusting the resurrection and the life, that he is the final word on life and death. One day, Jesus will make everything sad come untrue. Believe that, C3. Let me pray. Father, left to ourselves, we have no answers. As hard as it is to live trusting you and the questions that we don't have answers to, and the ways that we don't feel that you hear us or answer our prayers. Lord, without the resurrection and life, we have no answers. So would you help us trust you in the ups and downs and living under the curse? Would you help us be reminded and see the suffering of Jesus on a cross, who brings about redemption, brings about all things being made right one day? Would you help us live in that truth in the shadows? As we live in that place in the shadows before heaven and eternal life, would you help us in the day that we live in to live in the truth that Jesus is the resurrection, that Jesus is the life? And would you meet us with all the disappointments and all the questions and all the hurts and things that we're going through or others are going through that we don't understand? Would you just meet us like you did Mary and Martha? Would you weep with us? Would you give us the truth we need, which is yourself? By your Spirit, would you help us trust you in and through it all, to believe that one day there will be no sin, there will be no shame, there will be no suffering. That one day you will make everything sad come untrue. In Jesus' name.